Most parents are passionate about the activities their children are involved in, especially sports. But are they taking over the game? I'm Megan Lynch. This is Youth Sports. The adults have won.
Come on, stay with her. Stay with her.
Push up.
Push up.
Pull up.
Come on, now go.
They're having to grow up way too early and handle things that they're not ready to handle. You can see that by, like, how many tears do you see at a tournament? There's kids crying left and right and parents mad, parents yelling. I've personally seen cops being called.
Eric Arneson has been immersed in sport all his life. His dad played in the NFL. Eric was a swimmer throughout high school and college. His kids also play sports.
There is a lot of pressure to compete, to train as much as possible.
Arneson is multi-area director for the Fellowship of Christian Athletes.
And if we're just all into one realm, just one sport realm, and we overemphasize that, you're going to see burnout, you're going to see frustration.
As a parent, he knows how easy it is to get swept up.
We become crazy through sport. We lose irrational thinking in mind. That's the ugly side.
Is that the only side kids see? Talk to any sports parent like these two soccer moms. They'll tell you it can be a grind.
The commitment, not being able to do more than one sport, that's the bad for us.
I would say sometimes also the pressure that they feel from the sidelines, you know, especially tournament play. I feel it ramps up as parents, unfortunately, to the level of pressure and expectations.
Many families know a life of dinner on the run, weekends on the road, private training before or after school, and finishing homework late at night. Add to that the financial strain, paying for club fees, gear, high-end uniforms, and travel. The latest research shows youth sports nationwide is a $15 billion industry, expected to soar to more than $20 billion in the next 5 years.
There's definitely a sense of things getting ratcheted up within the youth sports environment.
Tina Sire is with the Positive Coaching Alliance. Sire says money has changed the culture. It's no longer just about fun and building a community.
Youth sports are now professionalized, and it's really become a business. And you suddenly have more and more adults in this country actually making their living off of youth sports.
And they're marketing to parents.
The folks who are running these youth sports organizations understand that parents are looking for opportunities to really help their kid get better and compete at the next level. It feels really good as a parent, and you feel like, okay, I'm setting my child up for success at that next level.
Instead, Sire and others say parents and organizations may be setting children up for failure.
Parents now see youth sports as like, this is really important, and you've got to get this right. And a lot of parents living again vicariously through their kiddo, thinking that they're motivating them.
They end up in the office of sports psychologist Joe Lennick.
I get phone calls from parents to, you know, athletes that are 7 and 8 years old, which is really unusual. Because when I started, the only people getting sports psychology 20-some years ago were professionals and maybe an Olympic development athlete.
Lennick says kids are supposed to fall in love with sports. It should be play. Many times that's not the case.
So in the process of it becoming more structured and more emphasis on it at an earlier age, we increase that sense of stress or pressure that young athlete feels.
He says it's not uncommon for a young athlete to tell him they don't want mom or dad at their practice or games anymore.
And then it's that conversation with the parent is you've become the pressure. And it's the things you say you don't want to be, but it's very difficult sometimes for that parent to step back.
The numbers suggest adults are drilling out the enjoyment.
Statistically, in the world, the U.S. has the most kids involved in youth sports up till about age 11. And then we start seeing a transition rate. So kids start leaving, and by the time we're in America, we're about 13, 14, we have the highest dropout rate, so to speak, of kids in the world in sport.
Some studies show as many as 70% of kids walk away by the time they turn 13. A closer look at what's causing kids to throw in the towel when our examination of youth sports, the adults have won, continues. Megan Lynch, News Radio 1120, KMOX. A whopping 70% of young athletes walk away from sports by the time they hit their teens. Experts point to one big change in recent decades that's contributing to burnout and dropout, early specialization. I'm Megan Lynch. This is Youth Sports, the adults have won.
We've had some real high-end kids, potential Olympic athletes, potential college, pro hockey players, all this stuff. that I've had to tell their parents they need to take a step back. Give them 2 weeks, give them 3 weeks, give them a month off.
If anyone knows what it means to be devoted to a sport, it's former St. Louis Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers. Rivers left home at 15 to start his junior career. He tells KMOX he's now seeing cases where kids have been pushed too hard, too fast.
They're burning out. This is too much. I can see it in their eyes. They look at me and they almost want to cry because it's just, they're exhausted.
Rivers owns Synergy Hockey, in business to provide elite training experiences.
So for me to tell them you shouldn't be coming out here, they look at you kind of different. Like, you're basically telling us you don't want our money. And I have to remind them that although I'm here to run a business, I'm also here to improve the sport, to grow the sport properly, and to make this the best experience for every kid who plays the sport.
The Olympia scrapes the ice for the next session of a Synergy camp at the Ice Zone, training ground for hundreds of young players in the region.
Is it a good idea for a kid to spend 12 weeks during the summer at camp every week? It's not a good idea. It's not. And the kids that do that are really prone to burnout.
Synergy president Lloyd Ney.
The parents look at it and want to provide everything they can for their kid and don't understand those limits maybe that are healthy. They see kids playing college baseball, kids playing college basketball, college hockey, and they see a pathway and they want to put their kid in that pathway.
And over here, Coach Greg is going to rim a puck to you. You're going to catch it, come around the two cones. Shot.
Ney has been around rinks much of his life, involved in player development in Missouri for years.
The thing that's been lost in probably the last 20 years is the notion of kids being multi-sport athletes. Early specialization is probably the one thing that I can point to and say that it is the worst thing for youth sports.
In the past, the critical decision of which single sport you should play often came at the college level, if at all. Now children as young as 5 or 6 play the same sport year-round in leagues, clinics, and camps, and private training. In his practice as a sports psychologist, Joe Lennick has seen the toll it takes.
What I find frightening, you know, as I've watched it evolve over 20 years, is particularly as kids get to high school, there's an immense amount of pressure to just specialize in that sport and only do that sport.
That limits a young person's world psychologically and socially.
Sports become such a focused and narrow focus, they foreclose on all these other identities, and what they have is their athletic identity. And that can be a dilemma as we age because there's no second plan.
If they miss the goal, it can be devastating for a young athlete who hasn't developed other options for life. For elite athletes, it's even more extreme, especially in sports such as gymnastics or figure skating that require complete dedication.
It's really difficult because also they get into adolescence and now that they're seeing their siblings, you know, in high school or their friends that they grew up with in high school, and they're going to dances and they're dating and all they do is skating. It is from the time you get up at 6 a.m. to get the ice time, and then you're doing your personal training, you're doing dry land training, you're doing ballet and dance, and you're doing, you know, maybe a sports psychologist, because most at that level do. That's 7 days a week.
Lennick says those athletes essentially give up their childhood, their adolescence, to get to the highest level of their sport. There's no guarantee they'll stand on the podium.
Again, that can be really difficult. It can be really difficult for the parents. Like, we didn't make the Wheaties box, right? You don't have the gold medal. You're not in the box. You didn't get to do the thing for the Disney and the parade. Parents who invested the last 15 years of their life can be very upset and emotional and resentful.
It may not be performance that knocks a child out of the race. Constant, repetitive training can take an immense toll on a young body. That's in the next segment of Youth Sports, The Adults Have Won. Megan Lynch, News Radio 1120 KMOX. Medical experts are concerned about the pressure put on young athletes. An alarming increase in injuries is leaving kids on the sidelines. This is Megan Lynch with Youth Sports, The Adults Have Won.
We live in an era of an epidemic of youth sports injuries that the numbers continue to rise.
Orthopedic surgeon Dr. Jeff Nepple, director of the Young Athlete Center at Washington University and St. Louis Children's Hospital.
Pediatric sports medicine as a specialty 10 to 15 years ago hardly existed, and nowadays is an extremely common specialty because of the number of our young athletes being injured.
Children between the ages of 5 and 14 account for nearly 40% of all sports-related injuries. St. Louis Children's sports medicine specialist Dr. Tara Blatnick sees some of the youngest.
We can see these injuries as early as, you know, 7, 8 years old, when kids start to play on multiple teams, start to play in tournaments, you know, start to play, you know, throughout the year without taking a break. So it can happen pretty young.
We also see, I mean, really severe injuries that are equivalent to what we see in adults that are need surgery and a lot of rehab and have lifelong kind of consequences.
One example of that is injuries to the knee.
We're seeing, you know, more ACL injuries at an earlier age. You know, we've seen 11, 12-year-olds with ACLs when you would have never seen that before. You would have seen, you know, the 16, 17, 18-year-old, you know, teenage athletes with that, but they're coming younger and younger and younger.
She points out, over a lifetime, that can lead to continued issues.
There's definitely higher risk for arthritis. There's risk of injuring the same ACL, risk of injuring the other ACL. So you've got, there's a lot of problems once you've had that initial sort of ACL injury.
You might think contact sports are to blame. However, Dr. Neppel points to data that suggests half of youth sports injuries are related to overuse.
Kids nowadays can play organized sports at a much higher level at a very young age. In some cases, are involved with multiple teams on the same sport at the same time. So that all creates an environment where it's very easy to be set up for overuse injuries.
Kids aren't getting a break. There's no off-season.
You can play a sport year-round at a very young age now, and I think that more and more evidence shows that that's truly detrimental.
Because focusing on one sport creates a body that's out of balance.
It's affecting how these kids are developing, being dominant in certain muscle groups and weak in other muscle groups.
Neppel says it's far better for kids to play multiple sports. When the focus is on the same movement over and over again, it creates wear and tear on a young and growing body. Research shows a five-fold increase in shoulder and elbow injuries in youth baseball and softball. In hockey, there are noticeably high rates of hip injuries from skating mechanics. And in gymnastics, it's the wrists and the elbows that give way.
Gymnasts often will see them, they have wrist pain, but they just, you know, everybody has wrist pain. You know, I should be able to keep going with wrist pain.
Dr. Blatnick says it's common for young athletes to perform injured.
We do see a lot of times kids will come in with weeks or months of pain, and you find, you know, this stress fracture, this low back stress fractures, you know, injuries to the growth plates in the wrists or something, because they've just continued to just push on through.
In some cases, Blatnick says they may simply think it's normal to have discomfort, or they're being told to shake it off.
There's a lot of pressure from coaches to keep pushing, from parents to keep pushing, and kids even put it on themselves to just keep on pushing to make everybody happy. And so eventually it'll come to a head, but sometimes it takes a long time.
She points out kids just aren't getting time for rest, for their bodies to recover.
We say kids should have off 3 months out of the year from a particular sport. So in theory, they should only be playing, you know, the same sport 9 months out of the year and have 3 months off from that. And they should have at least 1 to 2 days off per week from their sports activities too, just to engage in just regular kid type play.
With specialization and increased participation and time spent in our sports. And I think until we sort of have control of those issues, we're going to continue to see rising rates of these overuse injuries as well as these major injuries.
Do families have their eyes on a bigger prize than a tournament trophy? The stats on signing a college or pro deal when youth sports the adults have won continues. Megan Lynch, News Radio 1120 KMOX. If your child or grandchild plays sports, you may be looking ahead to a college scholarship. You may see a future for them in the big leagues, or it may be time for a reality check. I'm Megan Lynch. This is Youth Sports, the Adults Have Won.
The disturbing thing is watching people spend inordinate amounts of money for something that they're chasing that, quite honestly, they spent the exact same amount as what they gained.
Matt Bierman played football at the University of Missouri, an NCAA Division I school. He's now training the next generation of athletes as owner and president of Elite Football and Elite Performance Academies in Chesterfield, Missouri. When it comes to scholarships, Bierman says he's worked with players who spent modest amounts on training and got prime deals.
We've also seen kids where they've gone and traveled all over the country playing their sport and they get a, you know, 25% scholarship.
How much you get depends on which sport you play.
The number of dollars that are given to collegiate football players for scholarship is astronomical. The number of dollars that are given to college soccer players, the high-level ones, is minuscule. Like, it's minuscule.
In some cases, no amount of training or skill is enough.
Sometimes a tough pill to swallow, like, you know, an inch too short can cause a problem.
Families who think their player has clinched a deal may find it doesn't last. Experts tell KMOX top-level schools only give one-year commitments. That scholarship may not be renewed. You could be cut from the team and your playing career is over. The odds of even reaching the highest collegiate levels aren't great to begin with. An analysis by the NCAA reveals that only 5-7% of high school baseball, football, or soccer players make it to an NCAA institution. If you play hockey, you have a better shot. About 12% of men and nearly 25% of women will skate for an NCAA school. What about beyond college?
I always tell parents on the first day of coaching their kid, we're not going to be signing NHL contracts tomorrow. Like, that's not in the future.
Former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers played more than 450 games in the National Hockey League. He knows the odds. Of the 4,000 NCAA hockey players, only 6% gain entry to the pros. That doesn't mean they'll actually step on the ice for an NHL team.
Some people call it the pyramid. I call it the funnel, where you throw in X amount of hockey players at the top, and then as you whittle your way down, one pops out of the funnel, and that's your NHL player. But all the people that were in that funnel were incredible hockey players, but the one player who emerges from that group is really exceptional.
Instead of pushing young players down the pro path, he encourages them to use what they learn from the game to get a college degree, scholarship or not. And parents, they need to sit back and let kids play.
I see the parents around the glass, and I call them the glass foggers. And it's always funny for me because I'm like, you can always tell who's either having a good game, a bad game, or who's not happy with their kids' ice time by the size of the cloud of fog on the glass in front of dad who's watching, because when they breathe heavier, get angrier, the fog gets bigger on the glass.
Think your 8-year-old is a phenom? Ability as a young child is no guarantee for the future.
Proficiency, skill, and athletic attributes for an 8- and 9-year-old does not translate to athletic proficiency at 16 and 17 years old.
Rivers colleague, Synergy President Lloyd Ney, has been involved in development programs for years.
Just because you're elite at 11 and 12 years old is not an indicator that you'll be elite at 16 and 17.
Ney points out the opposite is also true. He's seen a lot of late bloomers who don't hit their stride until their late teens.
Trampoline 3, novice girls 9 years old, flight 5. Please report to the Stars and Stripes balloon.
What if you or your child has Olympic dreams? In sports like gymnastics, it's nearly impossible.
Only 5 fortunate, talented athletes make it every 4 years. And I think it's easier to be struck twice by lightning.
Mickey Orr, owner of Midwest Twisters Gym in O'Fallon, Illinois.
You have to, first of all, have talent. You have to be durable. You have to have picked your birthday correctly, because you might peak in a non-Olympic year. You may happen to be injured at the time when the qualification process rolls around.
Orr says gymnasts and their parents should be looking at other benefits of sports, not just the podium and prize.
Most kids do not get there, should not expect to get there, and the parents who are pushing them, or the coaches that are pushing them to do that, really shame on you.
Complaints about parental behavior seem to go hand in hand with any discussion of youth sports. What's happening on the sidelines is impacting the game. In my next report on youth sports, the adults have won. Megan Lynch, News Radio 1120, KMOX. To see the full range of human emotion, just go to a kid's game. It's not what's happening on the field or rink or diamond. It's the drama playing out on the sidelines or in the stands. This is Megan Lynch with Youth Sports, the Adults of One.
You got this, kid!
At 8 and 10, apparently it's the World Series every day.
Tom Cusimano, umpire. He also refs soccer. Apparently, he's a glutton for punishment. He's been calling games on St. Louis fields for close to 3 decades.
That's one! It's a good job, but you don't do this unless you have a love for the games.
Over the years, he's seen the intensity ramp up.
The parents all think that their kids are going to be superstars, and so they don't care about a team more. It's all about their player and their kid.
Hudson, step on third if it comes to you.
Go, go, go!
You'll see them get mad at the officials, mad at the coaches. We've had parents walk out on the coach in the middle of the game because they weren't playing Johnny as much as they should have been. It's crazy.
But most of the craziness is reserved for officials.
We've had it before where fans got so out of control that the game was canceled. Fans have cost teams games. We had a U10 soccer tournament that the championship game got forfeited at halftime because the fans got into it with the referees at half. The kids didn't know why the game was canceled. He had explained to the kids that your parents were so out of control that we had to cancel your game. So on the way home, thank mom and dad for not being able to play a full game.
That's two.
The day I stopped at a St. Louis area ball field to talk with Cusimano, a parent had already been asked to leave. It wasn't even 9:30 in the morning. The umpires later told me it was an insignificant call. Retaining good officials has become a critical issue. States with strong sports cultures, including Illinois and Iowa, say they've seen double-digit drops in licensed officials. In some cases, that's led to games and tournaments being canceled for a lack of referees. A recent survey by the National Association of Sports Officials asked members who's to blame for unsportsmanlike conduct. 39% said parents, 29% said coaches, 10% said players.
For every 10 officials that you start at age 14, you'll probably keep two longer than 3 years. They either realize that this is not for them, that they shouldn't be out here in the first place, or that it's too much for them to handle at that age. For the abuse that you get, you have to figure out, is the abuse worth the pay?
We've seen sports that are losing officials, and the number one reason is for $15, I don't want to go on a Sunday or Saturday morning and have somebody yell at me when I'm essentially giving them my time for youth athletics.
Lloyd Ney has been in the St. Louis hockey community for years, owning and managing facilities as well as leading player development for Missouri's Amateur Hockey Association.
Do you really think that this guy you've never seen before in your life has it out for your kid? Do you think that an official steps onto the rink or on the field and says, I think I'm really going to call a bad game today. I'm really going to screw this one up. It doesn't happen.
He has zero tolerance.
This might be a little bit blunt, but it's a character flaw in coaches and parents that act that way, period. There's no excuse for coaches screaming at each other, coaches screaming at officials, parents screaming from the stand. It's antisocial behavior.
The joke around hockey rinks is that the glass isn't to keep pucks in, it's to keep drama out. Unfortunately, that glass is only half an inch thick. Ney says kids hear it. It impacts their play and impacts their behavior.
And it also signals to a child that it's okay to act that way. And then you have 8-year-olds that argue with officials. It's not acceptable. There's no excuse for it. You can't justify it. You can't say, well, there's a competitive element to it that causes this. You can't. We have amateur players, amateur coaches, and amateur officials act accordingly.
KMOX reached out to several of the youth sports governing bodies in our region. One told me that 40% of the complaints their board receives are related to parent, coach, or player behavior. Poor conduct at games is there for everyone to see, but what happens when coaches are alone with athletes? More when Youth Sports, the Adults Have Won, continues. Megan Lynch, News Radio 1120, KMOX. When you think back on coaches you may have had as a kid, which ones stand out in your mind? The good ones, or is it the bad ones? You can't have any discussion of youth sports without looking at the men and women behind the bench. I'm Megan Lynch with more in my series, Youth Sports, the Adults Have Won. One of the most quoted coaches in modern history is famed UCLA basketball coach John Wooden. Wooden once said, young people need models, not critics. Tina Sire with the Positive Coaching Alliance says a study by graduate students at UCLA confirmed Wooden practiced what he preached.
They found that literally, I think it was 83% of his comments were constructive affirmations, so reinforcements of things his players were doing well, and then only something like 17% of his comments were corrections.
Not all coaches are John Wooden. In fact, a 2016 Texas A&M University report cited pressure from coaches or poor relationships with coaches as top reasons children leave sports.
Quality of pass L has got to be better.
If he's yelling at the kids about, we didn't do this, we didn't do that, you can address everything without having to yell at the kid about it.
Tom Cusimano has been calling games for more than 25 years in St. Louis, so he's had the opportunity to watch a lot of coaches.
The problem with the little kids is that they see that the coaches getting out of control, and then they get out of control. So you'll see a 10-year-old start smarting off to an umpire because he's seen his dad, who's the coach, smart off to the umpire.
Other coaches do restore his faith.
Well done! Well done! Good job! Good job!
Way to look for each other. Good job, boys.
The best is when you see a team that lost a heartbreaking game and the coach says, hey, there's nothing to be ashamed of. And it's when you hear that speech afterwards is when you could tell a good coach from a bad coach.
Yet much of the interaction that happens between coach and player happens when parents aren't on the sidelines.
Athletes are very compliant, and I think coaches wield a lot of power. And have a lot of influence on their athletes.
Riley Nichols is a sports psychologist and director of the Victory Program at McCallum Place in St. Louis. It's a first-of-its-kind intensive eating disorder treatment center for athletes. Clients range from elite and professional athletes to collegiate players and an increasing number in their teens or even younger.
Many of the individuals that we see in our care are very high-achieving, quite motivated, driven, perfectionistic, have high unrelenting standards for themselves, or quite punitive towards themselves.
Nichols says it's those qualities that contribute to their success in sport, qualities that are often praised and reinforced by coaches. But there can be too much training, too much pressure.
Sometimes there is more of an emphasis on performing and output and results. And I think the combination of that kind of holistically can manifest a lot of psychiatric issues, depression, anxiety, eating disorders are certainly one.
Chest up, feet in front. There you go. Nice and tall. There you go.
So they don't care how many broken bodies are found outside of the gym, as long as, what they produce on prime time is quality product.
Mickey Orr owns Midwest Twisters Gym in O'Fallon, Illinois. Orr is disenfranchised with the model of training gymnasts in the United States. While the most extreme examples of abuse have made headlines, he tells KMOX he's not convinced there's been a change in overall culture. That's based on what he's seen firsthand in recent years in some Olympic training programs.
It was very over the top in so far as the demands on the athletes and coaches who don't really know those athletes. You're going to find out down the road that that's not a formula for success, it's a formula for devastation. And very few can survive that kind of environment. But you get a couple gold medals and people look at that. They don't look at all the failures and all the problems and the kids that fell by the wayside because they weren't good enough or couldn't endure the hostile environment.
There are organizations in the St. Louis region working to create a better, more positive experience for young people in sport. In our series conclusion, we'll tell you what they're doing to change the game. This is Youth Sports, the Adults of One. Megan Lynch, News Radio 1120, KMOX. In recent decades, we've gone from kids playing a pickup game in the neighborhood or joining a rec team to highly structured, sophisticated organizations running leagues and staging tournaments year-round. This is Megan Lynch. As you've heard here on KMOX, that's ramped up the pressure and stress for even the youngest competitors. Some organizations are trying to change that. More now on Youth Sports, the Adults of One.
Should sports really be fun? I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I ask that because, of course.
Before the start of the U10 season at Scott Gallagher Soccer, parents are asked to sit in on a presentation from the Positive Coaching Alliance.
The way we behave at games often says, this isn't fun at all. This is serious.
PCA trainer Joe Scally. Scally is an attorney, has a degree in child psychology, grew up playing multiple sports, and has been a coach for decades. He says parents often have pretty high expectations, putting the focus on championships and placing their kids on elite teams.
I've heard this many times from athletic directors in high school, that they have players who are on the cusp between varsity and junior varsity. And they tell them, if you play varsity, if you're on the varsity, you won't play very much. You'll probably be on the bench. If you play junior varsity, you're going to be one of the leaders on the team. You can be the captain. You'll get a lot of playing time. The players almost always choose junior varsity. The parents almost always choose varsity. That's about the parents' ego. That's not about the development of their child.
Scally says some parents aren't doing their kids any favors.
My daughter, when she was in second grade, played on a team with a kid whose mom yelled, kick it, coming out of the car in the parking lot. Every time the ball got near her kid, she'd yell, kick it, kick it.
The biggest things we see over and over again is parents coaching from the sideline, parents yelling at officials, and parents lecturing their kids about how to play the game.
He points to a survey of college athletes who are asked to rate the worst part of their sports experience. For 80%, it's the car ride home where their parents analyze every play.
80%, not I broke a leg, we lost the championship, I got cut from the team. The car ride home with my parents. Think about that.
There's an old adage that the best team to coach is a team of orphans.
Parents are integral to the process, and anybody that thinks that they're not is, I think, is fooling themselves.
Blake Decker is Academy Director for St. Louis Football.